Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola back talking to you on Fridays. We're recording today on Saturday. Tom, long time no talk. It's great to have hockey back.
Joe, amazing to have hockey back and great to be back on Locked On with you. I know it's been too long. It feels that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some normalcy at least, even though it's so abnormal going to the arena to watch games. Even still, and before we started recording, I was just telling you that it was weird during the playoffs in the arena here in Edmonton, and going back for the Oilers two games to open the season, it hasn't changed. It is still bizarre, and man, like with Montreal being in town for two games, this city would be popping off because there's a ton of Habs fans. There's a ton of Leafs fans, and when those two teams come to town, there's a different atmosphere. It's heightened, and people who are generally Oilers fans all of a sudden throw those uniforms and hats in their closet, and they pull out the bleu, blanc, et rouge, and it becomes this big to-do. And I know when I make that walk from my place to the rink, which is a short hop, it's going to be completely desolate, quiet, and just weird. And seeing the Montreal Canadiens facing the Edmonton Oilers here in Edmonton with nobody in the crowd, Joe, is going to be so strange.
It is weird. You know, like you see these goals go in and it's like you're waiting for that noise. You're waiting for that reaction from anywhere. Yeah. And even some of these teams, I know this is happening more so in other sports right now. You've only got a couple of teams in the NHL that have limited fans. The Florida Panthers, Arizona Coyotes come right to mind for that. You know, you're even getting a little bit of noise there. But yeah, like I'm watching the Sabres yesterday and they score a goal and it's like you got the goal horn and then nothing. It's just silence. Yeah. And that is it's strange. I think I'll get used to it. I'm only speaking from experience again from watching these other sports, like the Bills, for instance. As the Bills season has progressed and they score touchdowns, and at the beginning it was like, man, you don't hear anything, but it's not something you like to get accustomed to. But I think as the season progresses, it might be something that goes away a little bit.
Hopefully. I mean, yeah. I really truthfully don't want to get used to this. Having no fans in the building. It's just unfortunately part of our situation right now. And man, it's, hey, by the way, Bills Mafia and David fans, those are great fan bases. I just have to say, yes. Hopefully when you and I are doing this show in the late spring and we're talking about playoff hockey, we've got people in the buildings and that vaccine is rolling out efficiently. I know up here in Canada, it's been very slow and frustrating. And I, you know, checking out what's going on in the States, seems like there's some hiccups too down there, but let's keep our fingers crossed and stay positive.
Yeah, pretty slow. I echo that, though. Like, maybe we can even get to a point where, you know, they do have plans to get limited fans in the building that are spread out. Because even if, right, the vaccine rollout has been pretty slow in both countries. But we saw last year there was a little bit of a dip in the COVID rate as the summer came around, as a lot of experts predicted. It wasn't gone completely. It was still something that you had to, you know, you absolutely had to take precaution about. But it was down. It wasn't nearly at the level it is right now, or even when it first started in March. So maybe even that could play into it a little bit as well. While we are on COVID affecting the sport, we might as well throw in here the news of the start of the season, that the Dallas Stars season was delayed due to a COVID outbreak. And then I saw today that the Winnipeg Jets had to cancel their practice due to a possible exposure to COVID-19. And we knew this was going to be different. It's not a bubble. They went through the bubble in the restart. It worked great. I don't think they had a single positive test, really, once they got going. So I guess not a surprise here. But at the very least, I guess it's good news that it's only happened within one team so far, and you would hope that this is going to be it.
I really hope so. And, you know, I haven't heard too many people freaking out about this, even compared to when teams went into the bubble. saying, oh, they shouldn't play and this is not the right way to do it. There has been some alarms being rung, but I think it's understandable, and people have kind of accepted the concept that yeah, you're right. These people are not being separated from the general population, and they're, you know, living their everyday lives, trying to be as normal as possible, but as safe as possible, limiting their interaction with outside public. But Joe, it's a fact of the situation, and I think we're going to see more of these, you know, out of an abundance of precaution. Teams shutting down for a day or two, and testing is going on every day, and we know the protocols are pretty stringent in the arenas, and man, it's not even affecting just teams. Here in Edmonton, we had a media COVID scare where a couple of our members of the media were positive, and the Oilers wouldn't let any media back into the building until everyone got tested on game day on opening night. And I, you know, it's frustrating, and some of us didn't get our results until the day after and had to miss that first game. But at the same time, you know, you're thankful that they did it. And it's also a sigh of relief. And man, like, I had interactions with some of the positive cases, but, you know, at a distance, wearing masks in the rink, but it still freaks you out. It gets into your head, and you stress out over it. And then when you finally get that result, you're like, boy, oh boy, that feels good. And I'm thankful that, you know, you get that opportunity. So it's going to be an interesting, maybe tumultuous few months, hopefully not. But I think this is just the new reality for the 2020-2021 season, which is unfortunate. But Joe, by 2021-2022 in the summer, late summer to September, hopefully that all of this garbage that we've dealt with over the last year is just a distant and horrible memory.
Yeah, I hope so. And while we are on kind of the start of the season here, before we get into some real hockey, we have not spoken since the season began, so I wanted to get your perspective on this. Me and Mike DiStefano had talked about this on the Tuesday episode last week. the division sponsors, the sponsors on the glass, the little sponsors on the helmets, we're seeing an increase in the ad usage this year by the NHL. I think, of course, that's expected. The league is losing a lot of money by not having fans in the stands, and they're going to try to make it up wherever they can without completely looking ridiculous, like in some of these European leagues where they're slapping 10,000 ads on every inch of the ice and the jerseys that they could find. So, you know, you've got the Mass Mutual East Division, you know, they got the division names. You've got the stuff along the glass and on the helmets, as I mentioned. What's your any of that too much for you to start the year?
Yes. Yeah, I don't like it. I think it looks silly. It is messy. It takes some of the pro out of the NHL, where you're like, boy, this really looks like the AHL, maybe a little bit worse. Now, having said that, Joe, I completely understand why the league needs to do it, and I respect that, and it keeps the wheels turning in terms of revenue and finances and all that, and they're trying to make good, but I do think it looks bad. I personally don't like it. I don't care for the helmet stickers with the sponsorships. I hope they don't continue that. I don't like the extra ads over top of the dashers on the boards. The ads behind the coaches on the benches are silly. The tarps with the ads are silly, and of course those will be gone. I'll even say this. I don't like that they have ads below the goal lines, and I know that that's been introduced over a year ago now. I think it's into its second season. I think it's too much, but unfortunately, it'll probably, some of it at least will stay, and it's part of business, and I totally get that, but myself personally don't like it.
A couple things from me on this. The Chicago-Tampa Bay game on opening night on Wednesday, that was the first time I think I had really seen the sponsors along the bottom of the glass. They had Adidas logos that went all the way around the rink. And that to me was distracting because there were a couple of instances where I thought it was the puck that was coming up because of the shape of the sponsor and where its placement was. So I think that could be confusing. And I didn't like at least where they put those ads. So I think maybe stay away from the glass, especially. Yeah. And then my final straw, and I'm glad they have not done this yet. I hope they don't get to it. Just don't touch the sweaters. Don't touch the sweaters. Because even something as simple as, you know, like something on the shoulder. So I'll go back to the World Juniors for this, which wrapped up a couple of weeks ago. Those Team USA 1960 throwbacks where they won the gold medal in the Olympics. That's 60 years ago now. The USA going across diagonally. It's a white jersey with the blue shoulders, yeah, blue and red piping on the bottom. That's one of my favorite jerseys in sports.
It's beautiful.
And you slap a big old Chipotle logo on the shoulders and it just ruins it all.
I love Chipotle, but you're right. It's great.
Yeah.
But
I do
so
also
true.
Love Chipotle, but
it's so true though. I mean, yeah.
So stay away from the jerseys.
Yeah, there's something I think, especially in hockey, the hockey sweater has this kind of reverence and you know, you don't want to see it blemished by a sponsor ad. And I know people allude to soccer, and soccer kits have, you know, basically it's an ad right across the front. Mm-hmm. This isn't soccer. The hockey sweater, yeah, is a beautiful thing. And, you know, it's the only uniform really that's referenced, mm-hmm, to as a sweater. So yeah. I hope we revert back to no ads on the helmets. And it's one of the sacred things in hockey where it's like, hey, maybe don't put ads on the ice. I'm watching this Boston, New Jersey game and they're rotating ice ads just inside the blue line digitally. And it's too much. It's too much.
Are we ready for some football? College football is right at the national championship, and there are some big matchups this weekend with the NFL regular season over and the first round of the playoffs over. There is one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Big game this week between the Bills and Ravens on Saturday night. The Bills open as a 2.5-point favorite, but there could be some weather in play that might lean you towards Baltimore, a more run-heavy offense. The bad weather could fit them more than the Bills, who are one of the most pass-heavy offenses in the league. So that might be a line you want to look at right now. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Joe DiBiase, Tom Gazzola here on the Locked On NHL podcast. We've been talking about ads on the ice, so kind of the aesthetics of the game to start the season. You've also had ads in the stands, by the way, that I didn't mention there, that you've got and where fans would normally be. One other thing when we're talking about aesthetics on the ice with one team specifically, because we're seeing a lot of teams kind of break out some new uniforms, some new combinations this year. It's like your Oilers I saw with the dark blue.
Awful.
And the orange. I don't like those, by the way.
They stink.
Yeah, not a fan. Those are their reverse retro jerseys, right?
No, those are their alternates. The reverse
retro are white with orange
shoulders and orange pants, which I'm looking forward to seeing, actually.
Yes, I like those too. I originally was hoping they would do something with those, you know, maybe an updated color version of the what would you call them? They're like the it's almost like an oil drop, almost mechanic looking.
Yeah, that's the Todd McFarlane third jersey.
I was hoping maybe they would do something creative with that, but whatever. Beggars can't be choosers, and I do like their reverse retros. Not the Oilers though is what I wanted to point to here. The Colorado Avalanche did not change their jerseys, but they added blue helmets and blue pants after being black on the helmets and the helmet and the pants since their existence. I always have not liked the fact that they've had black helmets and black pants. It's not really in their color scheme. Like, you've got very small amount of black in their logo. You almost never even notice it unless you're actually looking for it. So I never liked the black, but I like the blue. My one issue I would have is if you see a close-up picture of it, they're different shades. And you don't really notice it when you're watching the game. And I actually think it pops on TV. So I like it in principle. Just a little strange, I guess, that when you see them like close up, that the helmet blue is a little darker than the pants.
Yeah, that's something that they could fix at some point. But Joe, I have to echo your sentiment on this. There's always something about the Avs uniforms ever since they moved from Quebec that, mm-hmm, like I'd watch and I'd be like, I don't like it. Something about their uniform frustrates me. And then when I see them roll out these blue pants, gloves, and helmets, all of a sudden I just had this like aha moment. I'm like, that looks so good. What did they change? Oh, the pants, gloves, and helmets. And it just has this nice symmetry to it. And it all that frustration and angst every time I looked at their uniforms before was gone. And I'm like, these are really nice. And I've heard some people in Colorado nickname them the Blueberries, but I'm not going to lie to you. I think that they are 10 times better than what they had with the black pants and gloves and helmets. It just, it didn't add up. It didn't have a nice flow to it. Now I think they've figured it out. And you're right. Like I never even questioned why they had black on their uniform. And, and now all of a sudden it just, everything aligned. And I had that epiphany and I'm like, oh my goodness. Yeah. Wow. So I'm with you there. Good move by the Avs. And all of a sudden their uniform, I think, looks tremendous.
Yes. All right. So let's talk some hockey. Let's get into it a little bit. And we're only through one or two games, depending on the team so far, just a couple of days into the season. So if I had to ask you one team that you are sure of, even though we're only a couple games into the season, one team you're either sure is great, sure is average, sure is terrible, whatever you want to go with there. And while you think about that for a second, my team for this is absolutely the Chicago Blackhawks.
Oh my God.
I think they are a terrible team. I think you could have seen it coming on paper. There's no depth there. If you look at the top of their lineup without Jonathan Toews, your center depth in Chicago is Dylan Strome, Pius Suter, Lucas Walmark, and David Kemp. And like that just does not inspire anybody. You've got Brandon Peary on the second line. Nothing to speak of in net with Malcolm Subban and Colin Delia. And yeah, they had a tall task starting the season with Tampa Bay, -7 goal differential through two games, losing 10-3 in those two games combined. So I'm not getting on them for losing necessarily to Tampa. I'm getting on them because I think that roster is just awful. And I think that they're going to be at the bottom of the standings by the end of the year.
Yeah, well, they're going to be duking it out with Detroit in that division. That's for sure. And what are the Discover Central? the Red Wings, I mean, they didn't improve much. Joe, like Sam Gagne, God bless him, great guy, but he's not going to put them over the top, and it's going to be another year of struggles for them. And speaking of that, on the flip side, that division is going to be so soft that Tampa Bay is going to run away with it.
Easily.
It's like Dallas is behind the eight ball, missing this time, dealing with COVID. Nashville might have a better season than they did last year. Carolina should be good. Carolina should, you know, breeze their way into a playoff spot in this division. But like Florida, no. Columbus, wild card opportunity
maybe
they get things going. But the Pierre-Luc Dubois stuff, not good. Detroit, Chicago, this season's a write-off for those teams. Florida, no thank you.
Man, Sabre fans were itching to get in that division.
Because it's
not right. It's not strong. Like, I do think Tampa and Carolina are great teams, but Dallas, right, there's question marks there coming back, even though they were in the Stanley Cup final last year. Nashville, Florida, Columbus. Sure, I could see all three of them. Like, there are cases to be made that any of the three could be a good season, a good team this year. Florida's had the talent. They've just never really done it. Yeah. Columbus has not had the talent, but they've done it. And then Nashville has just kind of been really inconsistent in the last two seasons. So again, any of them could be good this year, but like from the Sabres perspective, when you're going against Philly and Washington and Boston and both New York teams and Pittsburgh, the Central Division is going to be a lot easier, I think, to make the playoffs than some of these other divisions. Would you call them the easiest though? Because I think, I don't know. Some people I've listened to think that the North Division, or also known as the Canadian Division, is the weakest. And I think it's deep.
The Scotia North to you.
The Scotia North. I hate the sponsor stuff so much.
I know. I just want to get that in there.
Yeah. I would say the Central is probably the worst. So even more so than the North.
Yeah. The Central, it's right there. North Division, here's the thing, is like Ottawa just smacked the Toronto Maple Leafs in their home opener. And a lot of people around the country got a kick out of that. I think that this is going to be a tight division. I don't think any team gets to 40 wins. And I think that the margin of difference between first and sixth might be 10 points. Like, these teams are all flawed. They all have tremendous forwards. Some of them have good goaltending. Some of them have no goaltending, like the Oilers. And some of them have goaltending that's mediocre. I really think that this is a toss up in the North, and it's going to, and like Ottawa's going to mess up some teams too. I think they're not getting the respect they deserve to a certain extent. They're still, you know, generally a young and weaker lineup, but it's going to be a tight race in this North division. And, you know, the Oilers are going to be looking over their shoulders, or they're going to be playing catch up at times. Vancouver, I think, takes a step back. Montreal is getting a lot of praise up here, Joe. And I don't quite necessarily buy the hype. When your three centers are very young, establishing themselves, despite the fact that they're incredibly talented, that is a lot of burden to put on three young centermen. And Toronto's gotten older, but they still have some amazing players in Marner and obviously Matthews and Morgan Riley's great. Freddie Anderson's a good goalie. Calgary, I think, might take this division just slightly. They took the Western Conference two seasons ago, and they only got better in the offseason. It's going to be super tight, and people are sleeping on Winnipeg. They really are. And Patrick Laine is he wants out, Joe. And guess what? He knows he's probably stuck in Winnipeg for this season, and he's going to play loose like he doesn't care. And all it's going to do is benefit him and the team, because he's going to go out there without a care in the world, and he's just going to rip it up. He already did that in the first game against Calgary.
Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola on the Locked On NHL podcast. All right, one more thing let's get to here, and it's good to start the season with a trade rumor. Nice juicy trade story that's been circling really since the beginning of training camp in Columbus with Pierre-Luc Dubois, who requested a trade out of Columbus. The wording, the verbiage was kind of interesting too, that he basically, it sounds like, wants to be in a bigger spotlight. And it reads to me like he wants to go to a bigger market. That was the phrasing, at least when I was reading it, from Elliot Friedman. Now, the most recent thing I read on this from the Columbus Dispatch is that he still has a fractured relationship with the organization, even though he is playing with them to start the season. He's playing on the ice. But he does not want to stay with the team long term. He's only got 2 years left on his contract, despite the fact he's only 22 years old. And the Dispatch also was reporting that Montreal had offered Columbus a deal that involved Jesperi Kotkaniemi for Dubois, but the Blue Jackets were insistent that they needed Nick Suzuki in the trade in order to trade Dubois, and that at this point, obviously, Montreal has said no to that. So, and maybe it doesn't end up in Montreal, but we do know that there are at least one team that's been interested. I know Darren Dreger reported that Buffalo's a team that at least inquired about it, so we know that they are a team that's at least sniffing around. What do you think happens there? Do you think that they do trade him? Do you think they try to ride out the season and hope that the relationship gets better? Columbus, man, like, this is not a new story. Go back to Ryan Johansson's holdout where he went to the KHL a few years back. Go to Panarin and Bobrovsky leaving. I mean, they are struggling to hold on to their great players when they get them.
They are, and it's somewhat surprising because, you know, you would assume things are going well. Pierre-Luc Dubois is a rising star. There's no way else to describe it, and I wonder how much of this fractured relationship has to do with John Tortorella. We saw him and Dubois had a blow-up last season on the bench, and then, you know, they come out and say, oh, no, it's all good, it's all good. That might be something that was reaching a boiling point. And really, it's not all good, and we're just getting the lip service from the Jackets and the player and the coach. And if the Habs do land him, I think that gives them way more legitimacy, because he is definitely more solidified in the NHL than what the Habs have down the middle. And then on top of that, I've heard that Winnipeg might be a destination for him, because there's some ties through his dad to the Jets organization, or his dad was a part of the Jets organization. And then, you know, you bring up the spotlight thing, Columbus and Winnipeg. I think Columbus is a bigger city. Mm-hmm. And Winnipeg is in the middle of the prairies. It's small, it's cold, but you get a ton of attention.
Right.
You get a ton of attention there. And especially across the country, I don't think the Jets are one of the more popular Canadian teams. I think they're down there with Ottawa and Calgary, that they don't really stir the drink as much as Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, and Edmonton. But and Edmonton's always full of drama, so that's what gets people going.
Yeah.
But you get it. There's no doubt there's a ton of spotlight on any Canadian team, regardless of where they're situated. And maybe he wants that. And maybe he sees an opportunity there, and they could certainly use him in Winnipeg.
Right. That's a great point, because there is absolutely a difference there between spotlight and size of market. Because like when I first read, like he wants to go to a bigger spotlight or to a bigger landing spot, you know, my first thought is always, oh, he wants to go play for the Rangers. Mm. Like it seems like half the players in the league do. But right, if he wants attention, you're not going to the New York Rangers, because you're gonna walk down Broadway and nobody is gonna recognize Pierre-Luc Dubois. Whereas you play in any Canadian market, or if you play in Minnesota or Buffalo or Boston, you know, one of these cities that is hockey crazy, you walk down the street and you're gonna be a star. So if that is what he's looking for, then right, that could bring those other small market teams, I think, into the picture. So we'll see what happens with Dubois. Again, for now, he is centering the top line for the Columbus Blue Jackets to start the season. Tom, everything's going well, right?
So far, so good, Joe. Hopefully it continues. And a lot of excitement this week. And we're back on Fridays, which is fantastic. We're on weekends because I know our schedules are berserk. So,
Big time difference here. So far, so good.
Yeah. And I hope everything goes well. Bills Mafia looks like they're riding high. Josh Allen, phenomenal to watch what's going on there. It's about time that Buffalo and the whole city gets to rally behind a good team. Man. And it's only a matter of time before the Sabres figure things out.
Man, I'm going to be hosting local coverage on WGR in Buffalo tomorrow on Sunday morning. And there are two very different shows. Given what happens tonight, one is, of course, I mean, you could be talking, all right, what big need do they need to fill in the draft or in free agency in this coming off season? And the other one is, all right, we're playing a game to go to the Super Bowl. Yeah. And that is a reality. I mean, Buffalo sports fans in general, the Sabres are the last team that's given us that feeling. 06 and 07, 2 years in a row going to the conference finals. I mean, fans really thought those teams could win a Stanley Cup, and they were close. The Bills have never given us, at least me, fans of my generation, never given us that feeling at all. And they're doing it right now. So,
well, my buddy fun. Chris Westcott with NJTV, the New Jersey Devils TV on their digital side, is a diehard Bills guy. He's from Rochester. And when he worked with me at Oilers TV, every Sunday I would hear it and deal with his plight. And I'll tell you this, Joe, you know, hopefully the Bills pull it off tonight against Baltimore. But if they don't, I know exactly what kind of show you're going to have tomorrow, because it'll be like when the Oilers were eliminated in the qualifying round by Chicago. My post-game show on TSN radio here in Edmonton was basically a 2.5-hour therapy session for the city. And I needed some drinks after that. I met up with the Sportsnet guys downtown after, and we had a few social sparklers to wash away the bad taste of everything that I had to deal with that night on my show.
Dude, there are a couple times I think where we've spoken and I have taken verbiage from you, lingo from you on like alcohol. I think hard pops is what I heard once from you.
Hard pops.
I'm going to start using social sparklers for sure. So get ready, anyone that knows me, because I'm going to be using that coming up.
I've got tons of those, and you can use them all whenever you want.
Love it. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to today's podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Sneaky Joe Sports. Tom is at Tom Gazzola, 2 Z's, G-A-Z-Z-O-L-A. And we will be back talking to you next Friday with more hockey to talk about. And we'll see. Maybe we get a trade or two by next week. Probably not, but maybe. This has been the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.